And right now, the media circus. The story of Senator Larry Craig's restroom arrest hit the media in the way Hemingway described bankruptcy. Gradually, then suddenly. After a lengthy investigation of the senator that it chose not to publish, the Idaho Statesman lost out to a Capitol Hill publication called Roll Call, which broke the news of the arrest this week, prompting us to ask, how did the senator's arrest stay out of the news for almost 3 months? It's a question for the ringleader of the media circus and NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, who joins us from our office, our bureau in New York. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
If you have questions about the media side of the Craig story or when it's appropriate to report on a politician's personal life, our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And David, how did we miss the U.S. senator's arrest on some pretty juicy charges?
Well, juicy, but legally kind of minor. I mean, if you think about the particulars, it was a misdemeanor. Any question of jail time was suspended that he essentially pleaded to get out of what could have been a very embarrassing trial. You know, he made the gestures in the bathroom stall in the Minneapolis airport, Twin Cities Airport. And also don't forget an interesting fact, which is that it has its own independent police agency that's not linked to, say, the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul. And therefore, reporters making their rounds would be much less likely to check it. You also got to remember that Senator Craig was at the time not in his own jurisdiction, not in Washington, not in one of the major media centers. And to be fair to him, not that recognizable a guy. If you were to line up 100 members of the American public taken at large, I doubt very more than a handful would be able to pick him out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that emerged, though, after the story, when the senator came out with his statement the other day, was that he said that he'd been the victim of an 8-month-long vilification campaign by the Idaho Statesman.
He may well feel vilified. The Idaho Statesman was certainly for months looking at rumors that had been circulating for quite some time that he was, in fact, gay and had participated in homosexual acts. They tried to pin this down. They ended up publishing their story only after the news was broken by Roll Call. And they said that they were able to come up with a few things. One gentleman told them that he had had oral sex with Senator Craig, but that was probably around 2004. Another person reported an advance in 1967, and another man said he had been cruised by the senator in 1994. These are somewhat nebulous. You know, if you can't specify the year in which an event took place, if you can't say something more than like he cruised me, which is kind of a nebulous claim, it gets very difficult to pin down and to put in print.
And as I understand, none of those people were willing to go on the record with their names.
You're talking about, American sexuality is a very difficult thing for the press to deal with. Homosexuality, far more so. And the newspaper agonized over this. You know, they consulted with people at various journalistic think tanks trying to figure out, what do we do with this? How do we handle this? And, what the Statesman attempted to do was to figure out what facts it could verify and then figure out whether to publish. He had felt vilified in part because they had a very contentious interview about the issue in June. Craig has denied previously that he was gay, but he denied it vehemently in an interview, clearly was very angry about it. And subsequent to this arrest emerging through Roll Call, they then posted that on their website.
Mm. Well, among those who was interviewed by the Idaho Statesman for this story was the editor of the Washington Blade, Kevin Knapp, and he joins us now on the line from San Diego. And it's nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Dan Popke is the lead writer on this story for the Idaho Statesman. Came to your office here in Washington. What did he want to know?
A lot of people think that I have the magic list of all gay people in Washington, so they come to see me periodically for the names. And so I think that's what he was after. What did I know? What information did I have about his sexual orientation? It was a really bizarre meeting because he was visibly uncomfortable with the assignment, I thought. And part of his assignment was to actually go and stake out the men's room at Union Station with glossy photographs of the senator that he was going to, pass around to people using the facilities, I guess, to ask, have you seen this man in here having sex? So it was a very bizarre meeting. It was an uncomfortable assignment for him and kind of an amusing conversation for me.
Because you suspected this would come to naught?
Well, because I think the mainstream media have a really difficult time with reporting anything about sexual orientation. They seem to operate in a 1950s mindset that says it's shameful or it should be hidden, and it's not. And I think what really should have changed all of this was the Lawrence, Texas decision out of the Supreme Court, which struck down the remaining sodomy laws in this country, because before that decision, you could make an argument that being called gay was to be accused of a crime. Mm-hmm. That situation no longer exists. And so I don't think that calling someone gay is a bad thing, is an insult, is a pejorative. And so the mainstream media, however, hang on to this notion that somehow it's wrong and we can't report it.
Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
Neil, it brings up some very interesting trends that sort of run concurrently and sometimes conflict. I mean, legal barriers to people being openly gay have largely fallen away in many ways, and societal attitudes towards it have changed, even in places like Idaho, where there are some lawmakers who are openly gay, although it's a quite socially conservative state in many ways. At the same time, the press has also developed some questions about are public people entitled to certain realms of privacy? Are private relationships, is personal sexuality, if not thrust into the spotlight through a crime or through the figure himself, is that really something that we have the right to go into? And this is sort of a tug of war right now. Sexuality, and particularly homosexuality, Kevin's right in a sense. Journalists have not come to a grand consensus on what to do. Is the reporter in Washington doing the equivalent of To Catch a Senator? It's very tough to know exactly which direction to go in for people. You haven't seen the same furor arise, even though it was a salacious scandal, about, say, Senator David Vitter. You've seen some of Senator Craig's colleagues say he has to resign. Senator Vitter seemingly has acknowledged patronizing a prostitute, which is also against the law, but a heterosexual sexual activity. He has not seen the same calls from his colleagues. So there is some sort of differential there. But, Senator Craig, while a man who has voted consistently to limit the rights of homosexuals in certain ways, is not one of the leading voices against it. And it becomes a very – where do you draw that line? I think that's what editors were struggling with in Idaho, mm-hmm. If they don't have something –
Well, I think, David, in answer to your question about privacy and who's entitled to it and how much, I think the answer is clear. There is very little privacy left for public officials and public figures, at least if they're straight. And a really good example in the celebrity realm was the outing of Lance Bass, who the pop singer,
right,
was out at a nightclub, a gay nightclub in Provincetown in the busiest weekend of the summer at a gay nightclub with his celebrity boyfriend, and expected that nobody would report that. Now, if that were a heterosexual celebrity who was at a nightclub on a busy weekend with a celebrity escort, it would be all over the front page of Us Weekly and People Magazine.
Right, but I'd encourage you to think about the different segments of the media market, though. There's the advocacy journalism that you're a leader in. There's sort of tabloid or journalism that Us Weekly and the New York Post and other publications fill. And then there's the mainstream press. In Idaho, they're trying to reach gay readers, and they're trying to reach, evangelical readers who may have very different takes on the same series of events. They apply different standards here, and even within the mainstream media, there's slightly differing standards applied, but I'd argue it's an inconsistency.
I think the standard, though, for a sitting senator in the United States is pretty low.
In terms of privacy, perhaps, but in terms of proof, the Statesman was trying to prove what they regarded as unproven allegations from anonymous sources, and they worked very hard. You can question their methodology, but they did work very hard over a long period of time to figure out what was right and what wasn't, and they felt they didn't have corroboration until Senator Craig's signature appeared on a guilty plea.
They worked a little too hard, because his office actually issued a denial in, I think it was December, which we reported on, and which a handful of papers in Idaho reported, but the Idaho Statesman did not. And to me, that was their opening, and that's what I told Dan Popke when he visited me, was, you don't need to you don't need to wait for an opening. You've got it. They have issued an official statement from his office.
But that's a fascinating
regarding these rumors. And so report that, if nothing else.
But that's a fascinating moment, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but think about that. If a blogger can post that a senator is committing adultery and this Senate office issues a denial, can you then sort of, you know, publish significant stories saying that even if there's no verifiable truth to it? You know, is the only thing that, well, he's voted against certain kinds of expansion of civil rights for homosexuals. You know, will that mean that only conservatives who are privately gay and don't admit it in public, are they the only ones who will be outed by the mainstream press? But moderates or liberals who might have different voting records would not be. Hmm. I think that there are just a series of consequences decisions that are very difficult for editors working conscientiously in real time to come with.
And we'll identify who's speaking. That's David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent, ringleader of our media circus. Also with us, Kevin Naff, editor of The Washington Blade. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's turn to Dan. And Dan is with us from Boulder in Colorado.
I've been listening to this. It's really curious. I mean, to me, I'm a media consumer from way back, had a broken arm the summer of Ollie North's testimony and was glued to CNN. And listening to this, you know, the difference between bloggers and journalists, I don't think there is a difference. You know, journalists will source and say, sources say, a senior White House source says. They will source anonymous sources. All the time, you know, it's all the time. And to me, if you can use an anonymous source, if the facts of your story are correct, that's journalism. I don't care if it comes from a blog, the mainstream media, whatever.
Facts are hard to pin down sometimes, even with the benefit of anonymous sources. What if you publish something like that and it's wrong?
Well, it happens all the time to journalists, and you issue a correction.
Yeah, that doesn't help the person who's been outed, their family life or the questions their kids face in school. David Folkenflik, these are very real issues.
They're incredible issues. I mean, the caller's right in the sense that the emergence of the blogosphere has helped to demystify sort of the authoritativeness of the mainstream press. And that said, the mainstream press, are more likely to have access to officials in certain kinds of government agencies and other places. They're more likely to have a certain kind of expertise, although not always, than some of the
right.
folks in the blogosphere.
I look at the sources that the mainstream press uses and usually anonymously sources, and especially when they're government officials, is they're sourcing a government official that wants to remain anonymous in order to spin the story. It's rarely that they're using anonymous sources to do.
Go ahead, David.
I think the caller makes a fair point, but if you're talking about a sexual act, unless there are additional things like phone logs or love letters or other things, that's a fleeting moment that can't be captured. If a person's not willing to put his name by the allegation, it makes it more problematic. If you're using anonymous sources who can verify, get you copies of documents, get you reports, tell you ahead of time who's going to be appointed attorney general, it's a different kind of event that you can prove or disprove.
You got this guy from the Washington Blade on there. He sounds like he's a pretty savvy player in the D.C. gay scene, and he probably has the same tools to evaluate those sources that you're talking about in terms of like a senior government official.
Well, why don't we say
if he's capable of evaluating those sources, and as far as I know, I think I've read this guy's stuff by extension. You know, he's been cited by other bloggers. And if he's right, then, hey, he's good. I got to tell you, the most trusted guy.
Well, why don't we get a reaction from Kevin Naff? I mean, are these what level of proof do you need?
I mean, that's tricky. And to clarify, we did not report. We reported the senator's statement back in December.
His
We did not get into the blogger's allegations because we could not confirm any of it ourselves. We did talk to Mike Rogers, and he, the blogger, and he declined to hook us up with his sources. He at one point even seemed as though he wasn't in touch with them anymore, that he couldn't put us in touch with them. And so we did not report those things. And there are very important differences between bloggers and journalists. And I think that bloggers want to fancy themselves journalists when it suits them, when they want to get credentialed and that sort of thing. But they don't abide by a lot of the ethical standards that professional journalists observe. So somebody could call my office, and you know, and it happens a lot that, you know, oh, so-and-so is gay. Mm-hmm. We don't just put that on there because somebody said it.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one last caller. This is Robo Beth. Am I correct? Beth, is that you? Excuse me, Paul.
Yeah.
Paul in Rehoboth. I get you. Delaware. Go ahead.
It's Rehoboth Beach.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
We're the nation's summer capital, and anybody from, you know, the Washington Plate will know, you know, what Rehoboth Beach basically is about, and it doesn't really matter if the man's sexuality.
So his sexuality should never be reported?
It shouldn't be reported. Did it have any bearing on the way he voted, or did it control
the... It has a big bearing on the way he voted, because he has a 100% favorable rating from the Christian Coalition, which tells you something about the way he has voted. He has supported every anti-gay piece of legislation. He has opposed every pro-gay piece of legislation. So I think it absolutely is relevant. And I think what we need to do is get to a point in this country where sexual orientation isn't considered a private thing. It's like your skin color or your eye color. It's just a fact. Mm-hmm. It's not a private thing for straight people who wear wedding rings and hold hands walking down the street. It shouldn't be a private thing for gay people. It's a double standard.
Kevin Naff, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Kevin Naff is the editor of the Washington Blade. He joined us today by phone from San Diego. And our thanks also to David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent and ringleader of our media circus. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Thanks, David.
You bet.
This is Talk of the Nation. Ira Flatow's here tomorrow with Science Friday. We'll be with you again on Monday. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.